to the ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is...
Hi, Dan.
I wondered what bit you'd have here, Gary. I wondered what hilarious little bit you'd do. I thought,
it was that bit I just did. It was great. You heard Steve laughing and everything. It was fantastic. Couldn't have been better. Thank you.
Well, I am, as always, joined by the wonderful Steve Foote. And you may have guessed, or indeed worked out, that Gary, the lovely Gary Hennessy, has joined us again after our roaring success of the Kill Team episode. Gary and I had a little chat, and Steve, and we thought we'd get Gary along for the ride full time. So, 2023 is starting. What did you get for Christmas, Steve? Because I got a new co-host.
Well, that sounds like Steve's being replaced, though. That's not the deal.
An additional co-host or a new one?
Yeah, nice one, Steve.
It's actually more like a kind of battle royale type thing, or a Squid Games thing. So I'm the guy in the mask, and one of you two will die by the end of the episode.
Oh wow, this has got intense. Jesus.
We've got till 10 o'clock. Blimey.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The clock is ticking. So today we are talking all about the year that's just been. So we're going to do a little bit of a 2002 year in review and also talk about potentially what we're looking forward to in 2023. So what I asked the team was to kind of think on some categories. Obviously, GW had their model of the year, which mm-hmm. was the wonderful Eldari Avatar.
I mean, it is spectacular.
It is a fantastic game. Yeah. And actually, when I was, one of the things we've got is model of the year for ourselves, I specifically didn't want to choose the Avatar, despite it actually being thoroughly up there. I wanted something different, but it's such a gorgeous model. That whole range is brilliant. The whole kind of Eldari refresh.
Yeah. It's a top tier range again.
I think the balance they found between absolutely living with the old models, but just being more detailed, more dynamic, is stunning. Love them.
So what I asked the team was, the categories were best box set. And that's not necessarily like a big box set. That's just kind of best squad or best kind of whatever it might be. Best book as well. That could be anything from a codex or a campaign book. And then a wild card. So the box set and book was 40K or 40K adjacent. So things like Kill Team, Necromunda, 30K, Titanicus, that kind of stuff. But the wild card could be from anything. And any of their systems. So we also wanted to talk about what our favorite model of the year was as well at the end, and then we'll talk about what our hopes for 2023 are going to be. So with those five little categories, we'll kick straight off with best box set or box squad release. Steve, what was it for you?
So I do really like the army box sets when we get a new release. So not the Battle Force ones, but the actual army sets where you get a codex in. And
the fancy pants ones.
The fancy pants ones, yeah, with your show off at the club covers, which is not quite the limited edition ones, which is quite a lot of money, but they are a little bit more, I hit the buy now button before everybody else kind of thing. So I like those. I think they're good. I think personally, sometimes what you get in the set isn't necessarily ideal or what I would want. But when it came to the Leagues of Votann, I thought it was kind of a sweet spot between the models you got. You obviously got your tokens, you got your codex, and let's just skim over the fact that there were a few issues with the release, as in power wise. But I think for me, as a set, it was such a great foundation, and I think it just kind of allowed you to pick them up and just build on them. And I think they're so flavorful, and for something that's, you know, come out of nowhere. I know we've had squats, and these aren't really squats, they're something new in themselves, but I think for me it was just kind of like if we can do that for every one of those, then that for me is banging. It's good value, it's a great starting point. I mean, that art was great. I think, you know, the GW are just getting super smart at smashing these out. So, yeah, that was my box choice.
It was a great box. Yeah, it's really... I mean, the whole range so far is pretty... when I saw them, I was like, I would really like to use a lot of these vehicles in the Prospector ones for Necromunda.
Yeah.
Because they fit like perfectly into there. Especially like the moon buggy thing.
The moon buggy's brilliant.
Oh, so that's what this is, the Sagittaur, whatever. Is that the kind of six-wheeled thing?
Yeah, not the land fortress.
No, the small land fortress. Yeah. The Sagittaur. That's by far my favorite model out of the whole range.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And I'm super tempted to, actually,
a specific part of the bikes, which is their coats. their coats are might be the best thing in the range. Yeah.
I did see an interesting post on Twitter where they compared the texture and shape of the coat of the Votan kind of sergeant rider, whatever it is, the Hernkin Pioneer, to the cloak of the Red Gobbo Christmas edition from before.
Yeah, fair.
And it's like, obviously it's all CAD designed, aren't they? It's just kind of like copied and pasted across. But I did think it's amusing of like the Red Gobbo has like stolen a coat from the Votan at some point.
I like that narrative a lot.
For me, the floaty, I think it's just floaty stuff in general. It's a kind of like it's a science fiction trope, isn't it? It's like, why have wheels when you can fly? That's the future. And for me, sometimes the new Space Marine tanks kind of suffer from this slightly. And certainly for me, the kind of three hover point bikes, the what are they called? I don't know. Hanky and Pioneers. That's not the name of the dude riding it. That's the name of the unit. The Pioneers themselves suffer from this as well, of like the floaty things just don't really grab me personally. So that's why I quite like the Sagittaur.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's just a nice mixed range, isn't it? And that box in particular was a nice kickoff for it all. And, you know, them being super powerful, I can see why Steve chose the box, because he's such a power gamer. Yeah,
that's just classic Steve, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think the only one model in the range that I think just needs a little bit of help is the Land Fortress. I think just the wheels look a little bit small for it for me. I think if you look at the buggy looks all terrain. It looks like it's the hull's off the ground. The wheels are out rigging wheels, so it's going to be super stable. I love the Land Fortress body and the whole idea of it. It's just, for me, the wheels are just a little bit
I know
dinky.
What you mean.
A little bit dinky.
I found it quite amusing as well that the Astra Militar and Taurox got the kind of the weird trapezium kind of, it's the wrong shape, whatever, the weirdly shaped tracks
that it has.
That they got kind of a bit of a ribbing on the internet. And lots of people have kind of designed kind of STLs or 3D printed wheels that you can use and all that stuff, or you can buy resin conversion kits, which look quite cool. And then Steve's just raised the point, which I think other people agree with as well, which is the wheels on the Land Fortress look a bit clumsy, a little bit too small. I think hilariously, if you just swapped those two sets of wheels and tracks, if you put those size wheels on the Taurox.
And this is like one of those TikTok McDonald's hacks, mate. He just made a GW one. But no, that was, I think they would work well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like I say, it's a cracking range. And I think it's always exciting when we get a whole new race faction
turn up.
You know, we're always happy to see refreshes, but a whole new one turning up is just expands the universe for us.
I think Games Workshop doing a bit of a balance between the two. You know, we talked about how the Eldari range refresh was heavily inspired by the kind of classic Jezreel Goodwin sculpts and what we know of the Eldari, whereas the kind of, I guess this is like the Squat range refresh, it wasn't that. This is a new faction that's inspired by the Squats rather than refreshing the kind of original thing.
Agreed. Yeah, totally.
What about you, Gary? What was your box set? And I should point that out at this point that Gary is going to be our, I suppose, a specialist games correspondent, aren't you? So covering things like bringing an expertise of Kill Team and Necromunda and things like that to the party.
Yeah. So with that intro, this might surprise you. I chose the Kill Team Into the Dark box, which is kind of like the newer core box that they released with the Imperial Breaches, the crew, and the Space Hulk terrain. And I just love it. I think it's a great box. It's a great setting for the game. and the I'm going to try not to blab too much about Kill Team, but it's just, it just gives you that space where you can do a unit of Imperial Breachers and they don't have to make an army for it because it's not 40k, it's Kill Team. So they can do these like wild and wacky kill teams that are just super legit cool. And like even the Kroot, just like they're fantastic models and they're just basically, you know, they don't need to update the Kroot range. They just can release this box set and it looks awesome.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing about Kill Team, like conceptually. Obviously the game's brilliant, but I love the fact that they can do these kind of weird and wonderful little sub-faction things. Or explore little, you know, Steve and I, when we're doing our kind of codex reviews, we'll often be like, oh, there's this great little lore snippet. Here's a little a breakout narrative point that wouldn't it be fun to create a whole army out of this tiny little sub paragraph?
Yeah.
And actually, and sometimes we get carried away, like, oh, how could I, you know, like with me and my Catachans, like, how can I build a land speeder army to be like an air cavalry Catachan? Well, you don't. You just build a small kill team of Catachans, give them a. Yeah. Convert that land speeder to be your kind of base of operations as a bit of a scenic display board type thing, like we discussed in our episode, Gary. And then that's it. And Games Workshop are doing the same. You kind of can see it with, you know, how they're exploring, I think, kind of factions through kind of like three ways. They're kind of updating new units. So things like the Kasakin for the Astral Militarum, like that is just a new unit, a plastic version of it, fine. They're updating old sculpts with upgraded upgrade sprues. So things like the Pathfinders and the Necrons have got widgets that bring an old kit, not necessarily as old as like the Kasakin, but certainly several years old. They're updating those.
Yeah, it puts a nice new spin on it.
And then the third one is what we were talking about there, is just taking something absolutely bonkers and a little bit different, like the Adeptus Sororitas Novitiates, the breaching team, things like that, like, and especially like all the weird and wonderful things that exist out in the Imperium. You can just imagine what's going to come out.
I mean, the Corsairs, the Eldari Corsairs, were just like super gorgeous as well. Exactly. I know they got it was around the same time as the Eldari were getting updated anyway, but it's just like a super sweet unit to have in Kill Team. I kind of feel like they fit more in Kill Team than they do in the Eldari army, but.
Well, yeah, that used to be a Forge World army list in an index. What do you call it? The old Imperial Armor books. There used to be a whole Corsairs army where you could. There were Corsair specific units, and you could also take, you know, other kind of, like you could do in a kind of Eldari soup way. And we've seen how Games Workshop have kind of like slightly distanced themselves from that style of rules writing. That Imperial Armor, you know, here's a whole Elysian drop troops army, here's a whole Death Corps Krieg army. And instead they're saying, actually, no, you could just have a squad of Death Corps.
Yeah, I mean, and why wouldn't you? They're so sweet.
They are
so
sweet.
So, question, Gary, the
crew.
So it was Tau that brought me back into the game when my son was about 11 and dragged me into Games Workshop again. And I was like, oh my goodness.
It was definitely that way round, Steve. Yeah, I believe. Yeah. Dad, I don't want to.
You will.
I could just see Steve and his wife. I was like, so should we have kids, darling? Yeah, okay, go on then. Steve's just thinking like, oh yes, when they're old enough, I can use this as an excuse to get back into Warhammer.
Yeah.
Playing the long game. So the towers were my first kind of return to it, because obviously they were so new compared to what I'd played before. I'm excited. The weapons that the crew have in the kill team, obviously I recognize the rifles and all that stuff. And there's a pulse rifle and stuff. But what are the other things? There's obviously some sort of bow, and then there's some heavy weapon.
So in the new lore for crew, basically... what one of the payments that they can ask for is, rather than like, because they don't need like credits or stuff like that, one of the payment they ask for is just equipment from different races. So you get these weird alien race weapons that we haven't seen those creatures before, because they, that one brood, I can't remember what the term for the Kroot packs are, but like they might have just done a job for this random alien race, and their payment was a load of these heavy weapons. That was it. That's all. That's what they asked for. Right. So that's why they've got these like funky new weapons, because some like obscure alien race was like, yeah, have this random like flamethrowery thing that fires chemicals. It's like, that's fine. So the crew are like, yeah, I'll have that. That's fine. Thank you.
Nice.
That is cool. I like that. And I like it. That's kind of expanding the kind of Kroot lore, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's expanded a lot more to the like there are, I'm pretty sure I'm not just making this up, but there are like Kroot packs that are with just the Tau, but there's others that while they get along with the Tau, they actually are just, they are Kroot mercenaries. So they align themselves with the Tau, but they're also just off doing their own stuff.
Cool. Because there's Audible book I listened to, there you go, which was the Blackstone Fortress one that had the Kroot, and that was quite good. In the,
oh, cool, yeah.
You got a little bit of an insight as to how they operated within the universe.
I forgot that random Kroot model. He was so cool.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I think...
Well, he was the first plastic one, apart from the original core kit.
Yeah, yeah.
And the rest were resin and metal.
Yeah,
yeah, so, that's super cool.
I think... Yeah, Kroot Codex.
Plastic Kroot Hound as well. Plastic Kroot Hound. Come on.
Yeah, those methods.
Random Kroot Squawky Bird.
when did we have Plastic Kroot Hounds?
It's in the Kill Team.
Oh, in the Kill Team. No, that's what I meant. Sorry, about before there was only the plastic guy. And I think that got people thinking like, oh my goodness, like a whole Kroot range could come.
Yeah. But that's again, not harking back to the other episode, Dan, but that's my love of Kill Team, because it's like... Oh, a whole Kroot army would be cool. I'll never build and paint that. Like, I'd love to see a whole Kroot army that other people... But it's like, I can just build this Kill Team that has, like, some Kroot Hounds in this Kroot Bird thing and a load of cool Kroot in. Like, I'll just do that because I can do that. That's feasible for me.
Yeah, so. And it's next to impossible to get those old Kroot Forge World ones, like the Krootox.
There wasn't there, like, a giant, like, Kroot
Krootox, wasn't it?
Yeah. It probably was just a giant Krootox, yeah. Really hard not to say Krooton. But
it's a Narloc.
Narloc.
All right,
there
nerd.
We go. Yeah, no.
Yeah. So it's a Narloc, and it whatever, came in the cargo version.
Steve, do you want to check with Dan that is the right way to pronounce it before you say it on there? Yes.
Gnarloc.
Maybe, yeah, send it to him first so we can double check.
Yeah, no. Oh, there was a cargo one, and then there was one with a giant crossbow on it.
I forgot that Forge World did all like random models that were just like a cargo Kroot Ox thing.
Yeah.
Like it's just, that's just what it is. It's like, that's great.
Yeah. And little things like, you know, they did the cargo sentinels as well. Like the
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they looked so cool, didn't they?
Yeah.
They were excellent. Yeah. So that was your model of the year. Yeah. The Forge World cargo sentinel.
From
96.
Yeah. From a few years ago.
Yeah. Nice one. Great choice.
So I've gone a bit left field with my box set, and I think hopefully this is kind of 40k adjacent enough to be included within a 40k podcast. But it's the Horus Heresy Age of Darkness box for me.
We'll let you off.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. You're far too kind. For me, it kind of encapsulates something a bit broader, which is the whole plastic refresh of Heresy. It's a game system that I've always been fascinated by. But have never really got into from a gaming perspective. And resin models, whilst the Forge World makes some wonderful models, but they're just, resin models can just be a pain in the so-and-so just to work with. Plastic models are so much easier.
Yeah.
It makes kit bashing them kind of like worlds apart in terms of, you know, if you're picking up a GW plastic kit and kit bashing it with a Forge World resin kit, it can just be a bit awkward, whereas you can use plastic glue to mold joints, like melt joints together a bit better, and it just looks a bit more seamless. For me, you know, I'm going to work on some World Eaters in 2023, and I'm going to combine them with the new Khorne models that are going to come out for 40k to kind of go for this kind of like late Heresy era kind of World Eaters band, where they are suffering from the corruption of chaos, and so that can kind of take into account the kind of inclusion of some of the 40k elements in there. But for me, like, combining those plastic kits is going to be a lot easier now that it's easy to kind of chop things off, and without, because resin, when you start hacking things apart, it can be quite fragile as well.
It's also the sizes probably match up a bit more as well now.
Yeah, and not only that, but also like just physically, like things like tanks, you know, and
you're welcome.
Get out. things like tags, you can get like warped sides with resin, and especially like flyers as well. I'm really looking forward to when they do like a plastic fire raptor or something. That would be phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. It's also just to you know, make it a bit boring. Just the value of that box was insane. But, you know, because one of the issues from my point of view for Heresy is like, I just couldn't, even if this game is amazing, I couldn't afford it. Where like that box basically gives you that core stuff that you like, especially like, what is it, like 40 Marines in there?
54 figures in total. So yeah, I think.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, that is your a big chunk of that army, isn't it? And it's
you could just buy like a couple of those boxes and then add in something like a tank and a Primarch, and then you're good to go.
Yeah it just makes playing the game much more, for me, much more realistic.
Yeah, and I think anything that like increases,
I'm able to do it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if anything increases the accessibility of a game system, then I think it should be kind of applauded.
Yeah,
definitely.
For me, I am quite intimidated by 30K and that whole. Have I read all the books and do I know all the chapters and all the lore?
Well, first of all, Steve, they're legions, not chapters.
See,
if you knew your lore,
there you go. Why did you even speak, Steve?
Yeah, exactly.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
I mean, not that the players, me and Ollie Grimwood had a long chat at Whitney last year about it, and you know, he was absolutely enthusiastic and super cool about it, but I don't know every single bit of lore about 40K. I haven't read all of the books or read all of the codexes or all the everythings, but I just think for me it just feels a bit intimidating.
Yeah, it's got a much more of a kind of historical gaming vibe, I feel.
Yeah.
Although I do think that can be exacerbated just by the kind of the internet in general. I think if you and your club made a kind of concerted effort to do like a Tale of X Gamers or whatever and started playing together, I think the fact that you hadn't read all the Heresy books or that you were kind of coming from it from a 40K perspective, or in little things like when that chat, I think was it Simon Elson had his Sons of Horus themed Primaris army in White Dwarf, and there was a huge kick, there was like a big kick kind of kickback on like some Facebook forums, people saying it was like, that's not Heresy, that's crap, it looks rubbish, you know, blah blah blah. It's just like, do you know what, if you want to use Primaris models and paint them as pre-Heresy stuff, like war Heresy stuff, go for it.
Yeah, no, I'd absolutely agree with that. I agree with that. But that absolutely is a kick-ass set for the money and setting you up to play the game. Bang,
it's on. A very good box set choice, Dan, definitely.
Why, thank you, Gary. Thanks a lot.
So what have we got next? Books.
Books, yeah.
Bunch of nerds we are.
Bunch of book nerds. Right, what about you, Gary? Let's start with you. What's what? Did you go for a specialist game book this time?
Maybe.
How so unlike you.
I know, who'd have thought today? So I went for the Cinderac Burning book, which is like the new Necromunda Camp Ashwaste campaign book. Mainly because like the book itself is super cool, the stuff it adds, but also I really love the fact that it's like advancing the Necromunda lore, which it hasn't really done for a long, long time. So it's like bringing about the I don't want to give too many spoilers from it, but basically, you know, lots of things change in the Hive, and it's just a great it does like loads of, Steve, have you got this book? Because I think you would absolutely love it.
No,
because it has like loads of it does one of these things that I love, where the scenarios in it is like, here's the scenario. If you want to play it as the narrative went, these are the things you need to play this. But you can also just play it with two gangs. And it's super cool because it's just like you can literally play like massive event by massive event with all the models that they suggest.
Mm.
And it's, it just really like advances what's going on Necromunda since the Great Rift opened.
So, Gary, as someone that's... you know, Necromunda Curious, and perhaps this is a good series of episodes, and this is one of the reasons why it's so good to have Gary on. Not only clearly he's lovely and his jokes are brilliant, but you know,
I believe half of that. my jokes are brilliant.
Very good. We can maybe explore like kind of how to get started in Necromunda and like a how to get started Kill Team kind of series throughout the year. But a kind of short version of the question is, what is Cinderax Burning as a campaign book? Like, is that like the equivalent of like the Arcs of Omen books that are coming out at the moment? Or is it like a codex? Like, how does it work?
So it is basically, I tell you what, I'm genuinely I wanted to describe it properly because it is a bit of an odd book, like, and it's really, it's basically, for me, it's the Necromunda version of the, oh, this is really embarrassing because they're my favorite. Steve, what are the awesome 40k campaign books that came out a little while ago? Vigilis, yeah. It's basically the Necromunda, for me, it's the Necromunda version of those books. Because it's really cool. Basically, it shakes up all of, like, House Hellmoor, and there's this huge, like, kind of finding the right heir to step in. And it's, obviously, with someone like Lord Hellmoor's libido, there's quite a lot of... there's quite a lot of, not just humans, there's also quite, apparently, there's quite a lot of clones that want the job as well. So it's very cool. So it's just, if you, it's not a book, if you're starting Necromunda, I would say you've got to get this book. But if you want to go, you know what, let's just play this cool campaign in isolation of everything else, then it's kind of perfect for that. And you have, like, one of Lord Hellmoor's daughters is one of the Dramatis personnel you can hire, which is really cool. She's got this spear that she can throw and kind of teleports back to her, which is really sweet. But
has that model been released yet?
I don't think it's been released, but you have seen it. Yeah,
very, very.
It's cool. What I really love it, because, like all Necromunda style rules, basically, if you roll up something like if you fail the ammo check with it or something, it basically goes back to its display case in the hive. Like, I really love that. Like, it's just like, that is amazing. She's like, oh no, never mind. Like, that was really good while I had it. And it also has, like, the new Escher and Goliath rules in there, but that's not, like, for me, that's not the important bit. It's this, like, they call it, like, the succession campaign. So it's all about finding who's gonna step in for Lord Hellmoor for the foreseeable future.
That sounds really cool.
Mm. And it's just another one where it's that, like, for me, like, for, like, with Vigilis, I didn't actually use any of the rules from Vigilis. I just have read the lore in it multiple times, and it's the same kind of thing for this book, but in with the Necromunda flavor to it.
Sounds great. I suppose one of the things, as I'm getting into it, is some of the books, or the books I've tackled so far, there's probably not as much lore and background as I was expecting in such a thick book.
No, that's fair. Yeah, that this one's the other way around, Steve. Like, right. If you want lore, this one's it's about the same size as, like, the Book of Ruin and stuff like that. It might be a bit chunkier, but it still has loads of cool, like, rules in it. But there's a decent chunk of lore to go along with it. And it just starts, it's basically just starts on 10 as well. So there's no, like, real preamble to it. It's just like, oh, okay, lots of stuff's changed in, like, 5 sentences.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Like I say, it just gives you, like, Vigilis. I mean, the way we used it was, like, we'll just look at that little box out and we'll play in there, or we need a city of ice, so let's look in the, oh, there's one in the poles down here, or and I think for me, having some of those references to just riff off, especially when you're sharing it with people that aren't necessarily in your brain, it means
of course
you're not having to bring people up to speed. You can say, well, you know that bit in there, bit there, and they go, yeah, let's fight that. Right, let's do it.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's where GW narrative books work the best, I think.
Yeah. It's a super, I think it's gone a bit, like, because of just general amount of releases, it's probably just gone a bit under the radar, but it's well worth it if that's what you're into. So that's cool. What's your book choice, Steve?
So for me, it's a bit of a cheeky one. And the
it's Eat, Pray, Love.
For me, the Warzone books have easily been my favourites. Now, I'm going to get this out of the way to start with, in that a lot of those Warzone books have been criticised in that they bring extra special armies, more rules, more stratagems and bloat to the game. Now, I'm always of the opinion that you can choose to use them or not, and I do understand that match players that want to understand all of the options they're going to face, it has become very heavy, and that there's so many options through so many books. for me, and I'm only going to come to this from me because it's my favourite, so I get to pick. For me, having some unique army options has been great, and being able to refresh some units while I'm waiting for a new book has been great. I'm going to pick Nachmund Rift War as my favourite. Couple of reasons. First of all, I think the way the story got told, and even though this talks about the Nachmund Gauntlet, which was where Abaddon's bringing his fleet to push through, to punch towards Terror, and this is his fight through this gap in the Great Rift. And there's some really cool space battles. And now, typically, I can't obviously go and recreate those, so it wasn't necessarily that this was great story seeding for Games on the Table, but obviously what we've seen now is that this is a perfect setup for what is now going out to become boarding parties and the Arcs of Omen and all that stuff, that which is great. So I love this bit of foreshadowing that we got in this book a little while back. I think for me what was really cool, and I said it at the review show at the time, was this little insight for House Mandrakor. And it just tells the story of how one Forge World went to war in 30,000, kind of was on the traitor's side, came back to their planet after they said it was all going wrong, and kind of shut the door for 10,000 years. And for me, it's this whole idea that they were corrupted by chaos, but they weren't necessarily worshippers of chaos. Mm. And that there's these two houses that, in this very insular way, that they've just spent for 10,000 years, they've been waiting for them to be attacked. They've just ended up slowly becoming corrupted a little bit and distorted. And it was just a really interesting take on what it means to be on one side and the other. And it's not all or nothing. You know, it's not tentacles and pustules or shiny good boys. It's this kind of in-between thing. So that was a fantastic story for me. That was a really good way of, just another way of explaining how everyone exists, how they became a part of the story.
That's why I quite like the Warcry bands that are brought out in the kind of the Age.
Yes.
I suppose it's like the Age Sigma version of Kill Team, for those who aren't familiar. Because they do explore that trope quite, like, that's the whole point of the majority of the war bands, is that, or certainly the Chaos Aligned ones, is that it's like, what does a Khorne or Tzeentch warband look like if it isn't fully Blood for the Blood God, or like bird faces and wings? Like, or like what does a Nurgle warband look like if it isn't fully into plague bearers and diseases and everything? How does a Nurgle kind of adjacent, you know, like, and especially when they're like tribes, and it's kind of like, oh, we don't worship Nurgle the god, we worship the great grandfather, you know, that kind of thing. And they have all these kind of different like riffs on the chaos gods. It's almost like it's diluted down, but it still goes back to that core principle of, you know, Nurgle the god of disease and life.
It's interesting to see, because you just think like plague bearers, don't you, and like plague marines, where actually there's so many different angles you can take with it.
It does make
it very interesting.
I think it gives people kind of some legitimacy about working up their own houses for whatever reason, and I think he adds sort of depth and complexity to what's going on. You don't have to do it, do you know what I mean? It's not like it's the new codex and you have to do it if you want to play that army. It's literally there as a piece of storytelling. And I think the other thing this book does really well is we've got some stepped campaigns that you go through war zones that give you different abilities, and I think for me they're very cool ways of kind of allowing you to play linked games without them being overly complicated, and especially if you're going to play them with your Chaos Knights, because you got so excited about reading those three or four pages that you can obviously tie that in with there, that they're looking for favors and they're looking to win the approval of their whatever gods that they've got. So I think for me it was War Zones overall, but for me this book was one of the better ones. I think if I had the time, I think one of my next projects would probably be doing that house itself, and what does, you know, what does the what does the infantry look like? What do the people that
What does this, a knight's hat, a sort of fallen knight's Secretario cohort look like?
Yes,
because they're not going to look like the ones from Mars, because
yeah.
That's the kind of like the official like Forge World TM Secretariat. Like, what does it's like some of the early Heresy stuff of like where you kind of reach a Primarch's planet and he's like molded them to his will and they're not quite Death Guard, but they do use scythes and it's disease related, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I think for me that was my book choice. I think for me it's just my top one of those. And I'm excited to see, obviously from feedback, the future of these sort of books is going to be the arcs. We've got, I think, three arcs of Omen that will take us through to the summer. And obviously they're even leaning into new ways to play and a lot less of these additional, perhaps bloaty rules. So, I think it's a good time for narrative.
And I can see why you'd want to do something with Chaos Knights. That, you know, certainly that was something that I was thinking of as model of the year. That Chaos Knight box set is just so cool. And it gives you so much opportunity to go absolutely crazy on conversions. And again, you can pick a Chaos God and say, oh, they are going to be mostly Khorne. You know, it's going to be loads of combat knights, or they're going to be mostly Nurgle. They're going to be dripping with oil and fuel and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dan, what was your book choice?
Well, in a similar way to how Steve picked the Votann launch box, I've gone for the codex within the Cadia Stands launch box. So the new Astra Militarum codex. For me, we've yet to do our codex review, but we'll kind of touch on it in depth there. But it's just such a cool book for, you know, A, there's a whole bunch of new models and units in there, but also B, it does something which I think on the surface can be quite like disenfranchising, but actually I think adds a huge amount of flexibility and is realistically for the best. So you no longer have to have a kind of Cadian army or a Deathcore Krieg army. You can have an Astra Militarum force which has Cadian models, Deathcore Krieg models, Catachan models and stuff like that. And for me, that's really cool because it means if you do just want to run a Cadian army with just Cadian shock troops and the likes, then you can use all the Cadian keyworded units like you could anyway, and you can then pick your born soldiers, or you can pick your kind of chapter tactics type things, your regimental doctrines based on how you want your Cadians to act, and I think that gives you a huge amount of flexibility in that you're going to have some Cadians who, like the Cadian squads who do like air assault missions are going to be, I suppose, maybe more like Elysians, and maybe like a Cadian regiment or battalion that's like in trench warfare are going to be a lot more kind of like to the last man, you know, kind of almost Kriegy in style in how they fight. And this allows you to pick your regimental doctrines based on how you want your force to look. And if you do just want to use Cadian models and have it look like a Cadian army, you can still do that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, one of the things that for me is most, as like a complete hobby butterfly, the most exciting thing for me is that I can pick my squad of Elysians or whatever and be like, cool, they're just going to be Cadian shock troops because those are the models that I'm going to use. I love these new Cadian units, so I'm going to run those as Cadian shock troops. I also want to do like a unit of, I don't know, think of a rat, like Mordian Iron Guard. You're like, okay, cool. Well, I want those to perhaps use the Krieg unit rules, whatever, but they're still going to fight like Cadians because they're in a Cadian army. Or conversely, you could be like, right, I'm going to do an Armageddon Steel Legion force. I'm going to use Krieg models, but they're all going to be run as infantry squads or maybe even Cadian shock troops, whatever. But then you could be like, oh, cool, these are going to be the Armageddon Orc Hunters. I'm going to run those as Catachans. And then you can kind of dip and kind of choose between all these different war scrolls, depending on how you want your army to work and how you want the units to be represented. And it doesn't matter that they're Krieg or Catachans or Cadians, because that's set at a high level during the army creation process.
Yeah.
I think for me, you're absolutely right, Dan. And I think if you look at a regiment, we used to have our regimental rules and our regimental warlord traits that we used to have to have. And they were kind of so top level that actually when you came down to your actual army build, they didn't necessarily suit, and that my Talan has kind of got two builds, one of which is definitely Desert Raiders, your kind of classic SAS Rogue Heroes, if you like. But then I've got an armored unit and a mechanized unit with, you know, infantry support and some Saber Heavies. But now, depending on how I run them, it depends the rules I can pull together to bring them to life and make them work. And
yeah, I think that's a great example. Your Talon.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, part of it's my fault for being a massive nerd and wanting at least two of everything. But, you know, that's my one weakness. I think the other thing is what we've been seeing, and definitely the war zones in White Dwarf have definitely been pitching it. And we've pondered on these in the past, is that look at many conflicts and many war zones. The actual order of battle, the list of the regiments that have appeared there, you've got some of your classics, obviously, but then you get these sort of random ones like the Brogan Forest Ranger units or whatever. They're just kind of made up names.
Or the Spiven 5 Tunnel Rats.
Exactly.
You're like, what does a Spiven 5 Tunnel Rat look like?
Not a bad word about those people.
But I don't know, you're definitely
salt,
using
Salt of the Earth.
Oh, but you're definitely using the Cordor models from Necromunda as their
Yeah, fair.
But I think what we definitely see is we see regiments fighting alongside each other. So there's two things here. I'm going to play a game and it's a desperate last stand and it's the scatterings of two regiments that have come together to hold out. So I'm going to have both those types of models in my army. Or B, we've got a specialist job to do and we're going to pick the best of the best of the best with honours of these two regiments and you're going to go on that special mission. So again, to make the army and tell the story that you want to, this new book absolutely smashes it out of the park. I love it.
Plus, we've got Rough Riders.
And a new tank.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lots of great
options. The Rough Riders look really cool. I mean, an absolute cavalry charge led by the Lord Solar would be, that would look great too, wouldn't it?
I mean, that's a great example of you could just run a whole bunch of Rough Riders, convert them up to look like Krieg, and they can be Death Riders.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And who doesn't want Death Riders?
Absolutely. Yeah. Cavalry.
And you get loads of extra heads on that sprue. So it's definitely something you can do.
Right. Next topic. I'm deep into 40K at the moment. The next topic is the wild card. So for Steve and I, this was an opportunity to potentially pick something from something like Age of Sigmar or its associated games. And for Gary, it was an opportunity to expand out of the kind of specialist games kind of remit. So let's start with Steve.
You said it's the opportunity to do that.
Rules is written, Gary. Rules is written.
Yeah. Sorry, Steve. You go for it.
So those that know me won't be entirely surprised that I've picked something Skaven, easily my most favourite faction from Age of Sigmar. And as much as I would normally probably pick the book, I think the new book is brilliant in that it just absolutely brings everyone to life. And in the same way, actually, that we just talked about with Astra Militarum book, is that it actually now allows you to really easily bring along lots of different clans. I'll have to be honest, I was doing that anyway because, you know, why not? Rather than looking for the power play. But what I've picked from my wild card is a Skaven Deathmaster model. For me, it just kind of sums up the model. It sums up the army. It's a clan I've not really done too much with, so I'd love to do more with them. And I think for me, it was a bit of a surprise, and and again, I think something I'm really keen on, and it's something I talked to Gary about what I'm trying to do with my Necromunda gangs, is, you know, just make sure the leaders stand out a little bit visually on the table, because in lots of ways certain factions don't have big heroes. You know, there isn't a big rat god giant thing. Obviously there's
the vermin.
I was going to say they do kind of have those.
I'm not sure we see them as being like. I kind of see them as being demons, kind of above the Skaven.
Yeah, so I suppose it's not really an Archaon level unit, is it?
Yeah, I think it seems to be.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, my wild card is the Deathmaster Skaven model. What about you, Gary?
So I have, I don't know, I kind of feel mine's not as exciting as your guys, but there we go. I love it. So it's actually just the fact that we now have a plastic Leviathan Siege Dreadnought.
That's solid. Cool.
So
yeah,
that's my choice because they're such big boys, and I just love the double power fisty guy. And it's just like, to imagine that running at you is, you know, anything from 40k running at you is hideously scary, even a grot, let alone just the fact you now have these. I think, as Dan was talking about Heresy before, so much of it I loved the idea of, but just building it put me off of it, where now you've just got a super cool plastic Leviathan Siege Dreadnought, and I want one of those. So this might be like ordering takeout when you're hungry. You make bad choices, but that's definitely my choice. It's just the fact you get, you know, there's loads of different options you've got for it that you can choose, and it's just super sweet.
Yeah, even that, like, I agree, the one with the combat weapons is the coolest one, but even the kind of like double shooty one, I suppose it would be compared to like a Mortis Dreadnought in 40k, like the old Rifleman Dreadnought with the kind of two linked auto cannons, that kind of stuff. Like, what's that weapon called? I don't even know. It's the kind of quad barreled auto cannon thing.
Yeah, you also have like the is like the Butcher thing. I'm not, maybe that's just for the Leviathan one in 40, the Chaos one 40k actually. But I know one of them's like a Butcher cannon.
The Storm cannon. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Which is the kind of four-barreled kind of auto cannon type thing. You've got the Gravflux Bombard, which looks funky. And the Cyclonic Melter Lance, again, you know, cool weapons. But for me, it's that kind of a Levantha Dreadnought with two four-barreled cannons. It's just like, for me, that's like harking back to like 5th ed, 6th ed kind of 40K for me. Like, yeah, it's a brand new model. And yeah, it's a bit bigger than the old kind of box dreadnoughts. But I used to have three Rifleman dreadnoughts in my Blood Angels army from before. So to kind of see that brought in as plastic, totally agree. It's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So that's mine. Dan, yours?
So I've dipped back into the world of Age of Sigmar here. And I've gone for something that's kind of like, I suppose, like the slightly connected to what I feel about Steve's choice, in that Steve chose a Skaven Deathmaster, which is a model that would look really cool in a Mordheim warband. You know, I used to play Skaven in Mordheim. Listeners to the show will know that I absolutely love Mordheim as a game. So seeing the Skaven Deathmaster model come out is really cool, because it kind of reminds me of those glory days of running around the rooftops of the old world, assassinating people with giant rats. And even the Skaven Death Runner in Warhammer Quest Silver Tower was one of my favorite models from that release as well.
Oh yeah, man, I forgot that model.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? And Deathmaster Snitch, the old metal with the kind of the three poisoned blades. You've got you know, two in his hands, one being held by his tail. And in Mordheim, you had this like Skaven special character who was an assassin with like this kind of like weird steampunky vibes, double claws. It was just really, really cool. And so with that Mordheim theme, I've chosen the Underworld warband called the Hexbane's Hunters. And these
it's such a sweet choice, Dan.
They're so cool, aren't they?
Yeah, such a sweet choice.
Yeah. My favorite thing about the kind of empire in the old world was the kind of the Cult of Sigmar, the warrior priests, the flagellants, you know, and the witch hunters. Anyone that's played Vermintide, clearly the witch hunter in that is just so awesome. and his voice lines are ridiculous as well. So for me, this warband is pulling on so many kind of nostalgia heartstrings. It's got dogs in it. Obviously, who doesn't like dog, you know, plastic dog Warhammer models. It's got like a witch hunter with a kind of burning kind of torch and a wide brimmed hat. It's just very cool.
It's also one of those war bands that you can like totally just buy in isolation. Like, you don't need to like get, you can just go, this is just gonna be a fun little paint project.
Yeah,
I don't need to get into the game. This looks awesome.
Yeah, and I would actually even go as far as saying it's probably got some 40k potential as well.
Yeah, fair.
You could convert the Witch Hunter to be an Inquisitor. You can convert the kind of the big muscly henchman to be, you know, you could turn that into a power axe and a bolt crossbow type thing. Easily done. and then again give the kind of like young novitiate the a 40k pistol and a 40k combat weapon. Don't know what you're gonna do with the dogs, whatever. Play them as death cult assassins, say they're really angry dogs. But yeah, it's got conversion potential for sure. But for me, like, using it as it is it's just really cool, and it adds to a like a group of Age of Sigmar and kind of 40k with that the Inquisitor model that came out during the kind of Gathering Storm.
Is that a guy that hates books, the one that's stabbing books?
No, from ages ago, the female witch huntery kind of
cool dragony thing.
Further back.
No.
Yeah. The witch huntery looking one.
The one that was with like the triumvirate.
That's exactly right.
I was going to say Shadowfax, but that's Gandalf's.
I think that's
Greyfax.
Greyfax, that's it. Yeah. I was like, it's definitely got the word fax in it. Yeah. Inquisitor Greyfax. You know, if you like,
it's really old. She uses fax.
Oh, I'm gonna start muting you, Gary, if things like that. But it kind of adds to this like collection of Warhammer models, which just look awesome and have got this really cool witch huntery vibes. And when they re-release when they do the kind of Cities of Sigmar book, and you start to see on the Warhammer community website all these cool Cities of Sigmar kind of units and not units, rather, like the kind of design themes, like these units are going to fit perfectly into that.
Yeah. Talking about Inquisitors and going on a tangent, how good is the Inquisitor Cotiers model still?
Oh, the one with the double-headed eagle?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still very, very cool, but there's a little part of me that hates him because he was taken in every single Grey Knight's army and just Imperial army ever as like an allied detachment, and he could like shoot you when you ride from reserve or something like that. It's just so, so annoying. So
Dan, don't hate the player, hate the game.
But yeah, very cool, very cool. And again, easily convertible. And still, like, you know, stick him on a big base and maybe on a tactical rock also, and you could run him as a Primaris dude.
He has
to be on a rock, new rules.
Absolutely. He already has a little rock, doesn't he? He's got a little tactical rock there.
Has he?
He's got like a tactical paving slab underneath his left foot.
Amazing. He's done his business, hasn't he? He knows his stuff. You don't get to Inquisitor stage without that.
If you stuck a Primaris helmet on him, and I can't remember sort of size comparison compared to like a Primaris Intercessor, but maybe you stuck him on a bit of cork to raise him up a little bit. Stuck a Primaris helmet on him, he could easily be a captain or a spaceman captain or even just a sergeant or something.
Yeah. Also, stick a couple on the eagle because that'd look well funny. If you're already converted it, you might as well do that as well.
Just make sure one of the eagle heads is a Primaris Lieutenant one and one of them's not. So, you know. Right, moving
why
on to
have, why do you have me on this?
I am beginning to ask myself that, but whatever, we'll roll with it for now. Moving on to model of the year, Gary, what was your pick there?
Okay, well, I've chosen two things because I feel like I'm going to get some backlash.
Interestingly, because so it was model of the year, not models of the year.
Yeah, well, so already hold on. Oh yeah, that's the police at the door right now. Yeah, they're coming for me, Dan. So the one that I actually genuinely love is the little heavy bolter robot thing from Into the Dark for Kill Team, because it's just so atmospheric and I just love seeing it on the board, and it's like, this is just super, super sweet and cool. So that's, you know, it's not going to get high praise from a lot of places. I think probably about 12 people have seen it.
Was that in Shadow Vaults?
Oh, it might actually be in Shadow Vaults. Okay, yeah.
Into the Dark had the cat, didn't it?
That's it. Yes, sorry. Yes, it's the Shadow Vaults. Yeah. Well, that's why no one's seen it. Sold out.
Oh, yeah. Sold out instantly, didn't it? Yes, very cool. Very cool.
Yes, it is that. Yeah, because it had the other random one that has like a little chainsaw on. But it just really reminded me of, I think, because like my favorite action movie is also Aliens, and in the like the director's cut, they set up like the sentry guns, and you know, there must be a little inspiration from these from that, because
undoubtedly,
you know. But the other one, if I can be allowed it, is the Necromunda Ridge Hauler.
Can I just touch briefly before we go on to the Ridge Hauler, which I agree is a fantastic model. But that the sentry gun's cool, but it has this little friend, which is like the buzzsaw kind of robot.
The thing from Robot Wars.
It's exactly that. Like that. Yeah. Like that just looks like it belongs.
The thing that I love as well is that is definitely a loser from Robot Wars.
Yeah. Because yeah.
Hypnodisc would beat the crap out of that.
Oh, yeah. Sir Killalot is. Matilda is flipping him into the pit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you could just definitely. Imagine that. But if they took off the kind of like 40K symbols and just said, oh, yeah, this is a robot from Loughborough University. We've got some students in the engineering department and they brought in the killer disc or something like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 100% that. It's just yeah. Robot. It's just so, it's like so ad hoc. I love it. It's just never going to do anything.
Oh, love it. Right. Yeah. Talk to me about the Ridge Hauler, because this model is huge. Absolutely massive.
It is. Because I think you saw it first at my Kill Team event.
That's right.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you don't get the scale of it from the picture. Because I think you kind of think it's probably going to be like similar to the size stuff from, say, like the Gene Stealer Colt.
Yeah. It's just a truck.
You know, it's an industrial vehicle. Yeah. It's going to be like that. And it is. It's a huge industrial vehicle. So it's, it's also not. I looked at it and went, I love this. I'm going to hate putting this together. But it's actually quite an all right job to put together. And I just really like the different elements you can use with it, because now you've got the Promethean tanks that you can attach to it to drag those about as well. And it's a sneaky additional model choice there. But so you can put the armored container on the back, and you can have, like, they've got the trailers that you can add to it, where you can literally just, the way the model's built, you could literally just add how many trailers you want. You could do 5, you could do 10, you could just do whatever you want. And it's absolutely huge and a lovely, again, a similar vein to like the heavy bolter platform thing. It's just on the board, it just makes it look so atmospherically cool.
Yeah. And actually, like, blocks line of sight quite well as well.
Yeah, it's a really decent line of sight blocker. Yeah, yeah.
And the side kind of mud guards, walkways, whatever you want to call them, that actually makes it quite playable still, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, you can fit models on there. It's absolutely, you know, that's kind of what's designed for. And it's just, I don't know, there's just so much about, like, the actual, would it be called the cab? Like the front of it where they sit.
Like
that whole element is just really fun to, because you have so many different options you can put in on the kit. And you can also just use one of the bits you get in the kit are like two guys jumping out an armored container, just like firing heavy stubbers. And you can just have those bits on an armored container on your board. It doesn't have to be anything to do with the Ridge Hauler kit.
Nice.
But
that's cool.
But yeah, it's just an absolute, I think these models just go under the radar because it's, you know, it's not an avatar.
Mm-hmm.
It's
for me the most exciting thing about a lot of this Necromunda stuff, for someone that doesn't play the actual game itself, is the conversion potential. This Ridge Hauler, the Goliath bikes.
And
even did they release a crawler thing as well?
That's coming out. That's basically, yeah, that's like I'm not sure if it's out or not yet, but that's a Forge World conversion kit for this.
Oh, is that for the, that? Yes. So yes, it is out, but oh, it's a conversion kit for this, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, so it looks amazing.
It's
as
huge.
Well.
It's huge. Well, I mean, it's the same model, so it's also huge.
It basically makes it bigger.
So it's the conversion potential. So those Goliath bikes and the Ridge Hauler, like, they're just screaming to be turned into a 40K thing, to an orc thing, rather.
Oh yeah, they've got big orc energy, that's for sure.
Oh, undoubtedly.
So one question I've got, because like I say, it's super impressive kit, and it's good to have civilian kits.
Yeah,
with so many military ones out there, Space Marine or Astra Militarum, it's good to have these much more functional kits. I mean, like Gene Stealer Colt ones. Can you make the front wheels kind of steer? Can you? Because every time you see it, it's always wheels in a straight line, and for me, it kind of feels a bit train-like. So I'd wondered if
right.
You could...
So I'm gonna look that the actual wheels and the axles underneath actually the longest part of the build. So I'm wondering whether if you wanted to, that is totally why they did that. Because, yeah, there's a lot to them. So okay. I'm sure you would be able to, because I remember taking a long time just trying to get them in a straight, in like straight.
Yeah.
So sure. I reckon they've kind of got, I always feel bad when like model designers do stuff like that, where it's like, this is a super intense kit because you could do so much. I just want it driving forward. Okay, I'm really glad I designed it with all these extra bits for you just to have it statically driving forward.
The old Forge World, Steve, you'll remember this because you used, I think, them for your Talon, but the old Forge World Elysian buggies, the Taurus, is it? The Taurus buggies, yeah. Rather than Taurox. Yeah. They had some really complex suspension setups.
I mean, they were the proper, you know, they were...
Wishbone suspension, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wishbone suspension with coilover shocks. I mean, you know, if they would actually work, you know.
Yeah, they would. It's really cool, but it's just, I don't necessarily want working suspension on my complex, fragile resin kit. I just want to glue wheels on it in a straight line.
Yeah. That's the challenge because it was in scale, the contact points for your wishbone is basically what could have been a nice big triangle. It just separates out into two tiny contact points that reach out and touch
the Forge World Imperial Guard stuff was quite skinny as it was anyway.
Yeah. I think they're fantastic models. I'd love to see them in plastic. But again, like you say, Dan, with this one, I mean, you know, what could you do by taking, you know, four of these wheels and turning them into a buggy? With a cab, maybe that's got, or maybe turn it to a six wheeler because there's a six wheeler trailer option, but maybe turn it to a six wheeler, but it's got a big tow hook on the back. Maybe it's like a recovery vehicle. I think that's the thing with civvy vehicles, which is so much fun, is that, you know, there's nothing wrong. You know, you look at something like VW Unimog 4x4, there's so many adaptations of that through hundreds of different environments and tree felling and ambulances and water bowsers, and to apply all that to this in a 40k world is endless options.
I think it also does that which some people don't like, and I understand, but it adds that bit of, I know that's a truck, like trucks are now, so that's cool, you know, we have trucks now. The ridge hauler, you could, you know, there's probably more advanced trucks than that now, you know?
Yeah. And,
I just like that.
I mean, but the most of the guard tank aesthetics is World War One, for goodness sake. So,
yeah.
I think especially when you're talking about them being out in the ash wastes, it's going to be what's simple that you can keep working, you can fix, you can bodge in the field, you can find replacements in the field. Something super high tech that breaks down, it's lost, it's useless.
Yeah.
It's like when the original G-Wagons came out, you know, what is now kind of gangster cars, but when they first came out, they were designed to be used for explorers. So all of the glass, all of the window panes, even the front, is flat. It's a flat piece of glass. So if you get your windscreen smashed in, I don't know, middle of Africa or India, where there is no in the wilderness somewhere, and there is no dealership nearby to get you a nice curvy piece of glass, someone can literally cut you a sheet of glass, put it in your window, and off you go. And I kind of feel that's definitely the design aesthetic for this vehicle.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a nice bit of realism. So Dan, what is your choice?
Well, my choice was going to be what Steve's choice was. He posted it in the group chat first. Hey, so,
Steve, what was Dan's choice?
So we'll get onto what Steve's choice was in a mere moment. But I've slightly cheated here. Maybe this model was announced, theoretically released in 2021, but I think it kind of got into the general public in 2022 in January. And it was the Warhammer TV exclusive Vindicare Assassin. Like, Imperial Assassins are super cool in general. They're like, it's a cool thing in the background. Snipers, again, it's a cool aesthetic. It's that kind of like, it's a bit edgelordy, but it's like, I'm a lone wolf hunter, bro. You know, and he's just like up there in his sniper's tower. It's quite cool. It's quite vibey. And I've seen some amazing, he's sat in a kind of shattered statue of an Adeptus Sororitas kind of hero or something like that. And I've seen someone, I think Kitbash, it's either sculpting like the body of an Adeptus Sororitas kind of statue so that you can then glue this head that he's on. He's kind of on like the head and shoulders of the statue, and then the rest of it is just kind of nothing. And someone sculpted a 3D printed thing of the body so you can glue it so it's like actually a whole statue.
Which just wow, so that's cool. Immense. Yeah, but that's really cool.
For me, like so I got this, you know, it came with the Warhammer TV subscription. I haven't watched much, if any, of Warhammer TV because it wasn't working for half the year, and I never find the time to kind of sit down. And like when I'm like, oh, I could watch that whilst I'm painting, but then like when I'm painting, I'm kind of looking at the models rather than watching TV. For me, the best thing to come out of Warhammer TV has been these cool models.
These cool ones, yeah. And they are all amazing.
They are brilliant. To be fair, the Auric Warboss was the other one for Age of Sigmar. And again, that was amazing as well. So for me, it was the Vindicare Assassin. Really cool model. Like what other people have done with it. And a good bit of scenery to boot as well.
Yeah. There's a really cool Robert Rath short story about a Vindicare Assassin that basically needs to do its last kill before it's officially a Vindicare. And it's fighting it's trying to track down a Jackal Alphys from Gene Stealer Cults. So
that's cool. You can get like a little kind of sniper war.
Yeah, it's super cool. It's super cheap as well. So that's one to, if you want a little short story, it's worth checking out.
Good recommendation.
And how cool is the gun that guy's got? I mean, the suppressor is as long as a normal las gun, for goodness sake. It's very, very good.
It's just cool, isn't it? Yeah, I think we can
all. The Vindicare is always trying to be too cool for school.
Yeah, it's definitely like the kind of he's like the basic assassin, you know. He's a sniper. What's your favorite assassin then, Gary?
I tell you what, it's the is it the Clexus is the anti-psyker, isn't it? Is that right? Is it Clexus?
Yeah.
And what's the shapeshifting one?
Calidus.
I love the Calidus because there was an amazing, again, another, sorry, obsessed with short stories. There was an amazing short story where this one basically was hunting out a corrupt imperial governor, and she becomes like, manages to becoming his PA, and then just like transforms and then launches her phase sword into him, and he like pretends to die and then starts laughing, and it turns out to be the Deceiver, and he's just basically collected some Satan from the sword and is like, thanks for that.
Amazing.
It's just like, thank you, that's what I wanted. That was when they weren't like shards, it was actually just Deceiver. So he's just trying to become like the most powerful one by collecting as much like Satan body material as possible.
So is the phase sword is that like a Necron artifact or something?
Yeah. So it's basically part of their god.
That's so cool.
Yeah. But that was pre where they changed the thing. So when I'm sure you remember when Necrons were originally released, the as in the new like launch of them. Not originally released, but like the original plastics range came out. The Satan in there were literally like that was the Deceiver, and that was Nightbringer. That was like what, you know, the actual full god. Where now the lore is that they're shards of them rather than, you know, the full fledged thing. But that was when it was just like the Deceiver was the full fledged thing, and it was great because even like I just really loved that he acted like play dead for a bit, because that's just really what the Deceiver would do, and it was just great. He's like, thank you.
And there's a great short story. In fact, I think it's a full on novel. It's a Horus Heresy novel with a bunch of assassins doing various things, and they've just released in resin from Forge World some of these additional assassin types, which now have
roles. Oh, they're so game. Yeah, they're really amazing. Cool, aren't they? They're really cool. Yeah.
So, Steve, what about what was my original model of the year, and indeed yours?
So, I went with Black Templars, Bayard's Revenge.
Such a
good
cool
choice, Dan.
Thank you, Gary. And why did I like this one? Why did I like this one the most, Steve?
So for me, sometimes diorama models can look great, but you think, I'd never really put that on the table in an army. And I think this one actually bucks the trend, and that it is obviously absolutely a certain moment in time captured. But I think that would still look great with a load more Black Templars around there, moving around the battlefield. I think it's just the whole energy that it's captured. I think
it's got a lot of movement to it, doesn't it? You can like that sword is about to be like plunged. Well, I mean, it is plunging through, but it's about to be like almost like sunk hilt deep into that orc, isn't it?
Yeah, pinning him to the ground. I think everything, like even the double-headed eagle in like a necklace around the neck, that swinging. We've got the ribbons on the back swinging, the chain on the sword. I mean, it's just, and even, you know, the orc's fantastic too. Massive, great, big power claw. And, you know, and if we want to be nitty gritty about it, it's a really gnarly looking wound as well. I mean, GW have kind of painted it PG, but I just think it's just, yeah, just stunning. And I think actually some space marines can be hard to pose, or I think you've always thought them hard to pose. You know what I mean? Could you imagine what does it look like taking a normal model and trying to raise the space marine arms above its head, and how would that work? And would it look a bit weird? But I think it just proves it wrong. You know, that they're actually, yeah, of course they can fight with all that armor on. And so, yeah, and I mean, just all the symbology, the sword looks fantastic. It's just spot on. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, absolutely. No. And it's mimics a bit of Black Templar's art from ages ago as well, which, again, when they release models that replicate art from like a decade or more ago, it's the art that, like, especially when it's like two decades old, it's the art that I remember as a kid. And so it, like, models like that, and even the Warhammer TV Chaos Terminator one, it just kind of like tugs on all the right nostalgia heartstrings, and just,
yeah, totally
super cool. I especially love this because not only am I a big Black Templars fanboy just in general, but also I'm thinking of doing a little Blood Angels army. And I'm thinking of using company. So put some.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah. So like, if you shave off some of the Templar iconography. If you remember the original Death Company plastic kits, there was a guy with a tabard. I was worried that it might look a bit weird, but there was a guy with a tabard in the Death Company thing. So I don't feel like having.
I don't see the tabard as like Black Templar exclusive.
No. Oh, good. Good.
I think that worked. Mainly due to the many cool Forge World Blood Angel models. A lot of them, a lot of them are, you know, tabard heavy. So I think it would definitely work.
And even like the sort of chained weapons.
Mm.
You know, I don't.
For Death Guard, yeah. I think it'd be Death Company would work perfectly, yeah. Especially with, like, you know, getting the Black Rage on. Exactly. It makes sense to, you know, just makes logistical sense to chain their weapons to.
Yeah. So I think you know, because a Crusader squad comes with what, like five normal kind of intercessors, four neophytes, four neophytes, five Primaris initiates, and a Sword Brethren guy. So like, all you need to do is find a squad of five intercessors, which, oh, guess what, the Death Company intercessor box comes with five dudes. And those, nice. Those, that's your 10-man squad right there.
That works very well.
So for me, so this Bayard's Revenge thing, I'm just thinking like, oh, could I convert that into like a Death Company kind of captain or something like that? That would be quite cool, right?
Yeah.
It would be awesome.
Jobs are good, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think like, especially with a lot of Space Marine stuff, a helmet swap to a chapter specific one and some or shoulder pads just makes the world of difference.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, it's a tier, excellent model.
A teardrop, you know, blood symbol hanging, swinging off something. And it's those little bright spots of red that catches the eye and will tell the story. It would be brilliant.
And, you know, a case in point, I think, for that is, so do you remember the kind of chaplain that came with the Indomitus box?
Yes, yeah.
So I reckon him with a Sangreedy Guard head.
Mm-hmm.
would look so cool.
Yeah.
And then do you remember like the kind of second edition Death Company box that came with like, I think like 10 or probably 9 Death Company models and like the metal bodied ones with the kind of plastic arms and a chaplain, the old Death Company chaplain metal.
Yes. Yeah.
So I want to do that. But so like with 9 Death Company and an Indomitus chaplain with the Sangreal Guard head to be that kind of a new version of that chaplain.
Yeah, that'd be a really cool idea. Again, you don't, you know, just do those units. You don't have to think about doing anything more than that.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And use it for kill team.
There we go. Yeah. Oh, imagine that. Imagine a Death Company kill team.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely.
Don't have to imagine it, Dan. That can be easily done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't think you'd need 10 models though, would you?
No, you just need one, wouldn't you? Like that.
Well, it depends how many options you want to do, because there's probably like, I think there's like 7 or 8 options for the for the intercessor team. So you know, you might only select 6 models, but you probably could have all the different options.
Oh, cool. Yes, I'm going to be here for the kill team special show when it happens this year.
Yes, definitely.
You mean if it happens this year, ye of little faith. Right, talking of this year, what Gary, are you so what are we gonna do? Like, what are we looking forward to the most that we know is happening, or what are we gonna
I just made some stuff up.
Okay, cool, that's what I thought. Yeah.
It's no fun. It's no fun, you know. I'm saying no, if that's what you've done, that's fine, you know? But right, so okay, you know, we've got Adeptus Titanicus.
You know
we've got Aeronautica.
Yeah. Keep going.
So what I'm doing is putting my hands together.
Yeah,
and each hand representing one of those games.
And then you open your hand up, and inside is a very, very small tank.
Exactly, and it's just a book that just like combines all three systems.
Oh, that would be absolutely epic, Gary.
Oh, there we go.
The crown is mine.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah. That would be my wish list. I'd be happy all year if they went, oh yeah, here's the new edition, and you use these really awesome Titan models and these really amazing plane models that, you know, are reasonably right scaled for each other. So it's
I would absolutely love that. Not only because I bought a bunch of Titanicus models because I kind of wanted to paint a Titan. I have zero requirement to learn another game, and also Titanicus is from what I've heard from people talking about it, is a bit like Necromunda in that it's quite an old styled game. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of kind of like resource management and stuff going on. And for me, like my ADHD brain, it doesn't work for me. Like I that's why I really enjoy things like Kill Team and 40K, because they're much more modern games and they're designed that way. And so some people would say, oh, they're simplified, but yeah, so what? Cool. I want games to be simple, because I take more enjoyment about kind of the hobby side of it and like the playing of the game rather than like the management of the playing of the game.
Yeah. But, I mean, that would be my because to see that would be my ultimate wish.
That would be cool. I mean, back in the day when it was, what was it originally called? Was it just called Space Marine, the original Titan game? No, that was...
I don't know, Steve. I think you're going far beyond my...
Steve, you were the only one alive at that point, mate.
Yeah, so. I was. Yeah, exactly. So I think...
Get out of town, mate. Gary and I were both alive during that.
it cost Steve 4 doubloons.
Yes. three goats. So I had loads of the epic stuff, and it was very cool. I think, like Dan said, I've looked at Titanicus, and the models are fantastic, amazing engineering. It's just, is it another system that I'm going to learn? More scenery I need to build? If I had all the time and all the money then and all the brain power, then I probably would. But little tanks, I'm in.
We all have enough power for little tanks.
Little tanks, and I'm in.
Little tanks and tiny soldiers, yes.
and cute little planes. It's going to be amazing. I've been backing a Patreon, which for me is like one of the coolest things about the concept of this, and it's called Grim Dark Terrain, and he does these STLs for 3D printing of epic sized. Like, it's designed for Titanicus. And when I first started thinking of getting into Titanicus, or at least trying it like 2 years ago or something, whenever it first came out, I started backing this Patreon. I've never cancelled it, and it's only like a few quid a month, whatever. So I've got like 2 years worth of these fantastically detailed and amazingly designed STLs, which.
So in fact, it would save you money if they brought this game out.
Oh yeah, because I basically got the. It's only going to cost me in resin, right? So, but my point there is like, as soon as it comes out, I can just be like, I can build some amazing boards. And for me, like terrain is one of the coolest things about this hobby.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Gary, I'm looking at the site now. Am I right in thinking, Dan? There's a train.
What, on Grimdark Terrain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a train.
There's a train. Oh, we know how you feel about cool. trains.
Yeah,
I do like train terrain.
Well, I'm not even going to attempt
and
to
there's
say.
And there's a massive earth extractor thing.
Oh, mate, yeah, check it out. It's really cool. Really cool.
Steve now orders 5 Titans. Turns out I do have all those things for this game.
Steve's like, oh, I don't have the time or money for any of this. All trains, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
Wow.
What Steve desperately wants is just a Hornby set.
So I think I've mentioned it on the show, but my dad is a massive model railway fan, and that's
mine too.
And
it's because they're amazing.
They are, and the fact that my dad builds stories into his layout. So there's a street, high street in there, and stood outside Marks and Spencer's is my mum, because she's always bought from Marks and Spencer's. Someone's dogs escaped from a
bit
field.
Of a flex, mate. So, it's a cost of living crisis.
So there's all these stories going on there. So for me, it's like, I'm not surprised. I want to build stories into my games, and I want to have really detailed terrain. Because...
Steve, hear me out. What gauge is epic, do you think? Like N gauge?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. You could probably get some N gauge Hornby or Fleischmann or equivalent, right? And then get the actual engines themselves.
Yeah.
And then some like empty kind of cargo carriages, and then 3D print little 40k terrain train stuff in the right scale to attach it, and then you could have like a working Heresy train going around your little epic battlefield. Freaking cool would that be?
As a massive tangent talking about trains, I remember one of my neighbors getting really angry at me as a kid because like I started getting into trains, and he's like, in my loft I've got like this whole setup, and I went up and I literally asked a question about every single little person he had on the board. And I was like, who's this guy? He's like, oh, that's the milkman. I was like, what's his name? And it's like, well, he's not got a name. I was like, let's name him. And I wasn't invited back.
But showing your narrative gaming roots there, mate.
I just wanted to know what was going on. You know, I want the story. But yeah, so that warms my heart that your dad does that, Steve. That's great.
Yeah. No.
Our dads should get together and have a train. Like, Steve, when you and I get together and have a 40K game, like, you know, we should like, you know, get our dads together to play Hornby and Fleischmann or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that train is really nice. It's a monorail, so we'd have to work that out, but I'm easily see us slightly scaling up the body.
Right, Steve,
What?
Close that tab. Talk to me about what you're looking forward to in 2022, because this is going to, like, we're going to have an hour of train chat now.
Okay.
That's Patreon content.
So mine's kind of double-barreled, but...
It's a shotgun.
Exactly. We've seen there's mention for boarding parties. Arbite or Arbites, depending on your bent, should be coming. So for me, yes, 40K coppers, love that. I've always loved those, the idea of them, even from the old metals. I think what would be interesting is, are we going to see maybe 50 power level box sets for boarding action? So could we see like a combat patrol
50 power or 25?
Well, it'd be 50 power, so that it's 500 points, which is what you need for boarding parties.
500 points is 25 power.
Sorry, yes, wrong way around. Yes, 100%. 25.
Just you wanting more, Steve, that's it's understandable. They're a cool rage.
Sorry, I don't mean to, I'm not going to be like, I think you've got your points wrong, but...
No, Rishi would be happy with your maths there. You obviously did study till 18. So I think for me, if we had...
It's a very niche. Well, not that niche, but it's a very specific, UK
current
politics.
UK
current.
Thing, yeah.
Like when someone's listening to this in like, you know, 6 months' time, and we've had about 4 different prime ministers since then, like, it was going to be like, who? What? What's that reference to?
Maybe they're confident about it. So I think if we do end up seeing 25 power level box sets, which are boarding parties, of which one of them could be the police, then that would be my wish come true.
I mean, it would be pretty amazing, wouldn't it?
It would be pretty cool. I did see someone posting that like the combat patrol is just shouts again. We've gone on a big like kind of nostalgia trip on this episode, but like combat patrol is the armies that you saw in the middle of the codex from like 4th edition, 5th edition.
Yeah, fair. Like, yeah.
It's a Farseer with some guardians and some striking scorpions. That is your army.
Yeah,
yeah.
Back then, when you're like, oh, how am I ever going to afford an Elder Dreadnought? You know, that's a huge metal thing. Like, I'm never going to be able to afford that in one go. That's when armies kind of look like that, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's fair. My gut feeling is I reckon it's going to be a smaller scale thing, but it's I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm trying to steal them into my own system. I'm just thinking like I can see them being like a kill team thing.
Yeah, and that we've spoken about like that's right at the beginning. It's like kill team allows Games Workshop to do this without having to make them a 40k army.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and because you have because the naval breaches are mentioned in boarding actions as well, isn't it? Like you can have a unit of those. I think. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think so. One thing that niggles me a little bit is that you solved the problem for me, Gary, is that if they live in the kill team world, which isn't
just play kill team,
which isn't necessarily bang up to date in aligning itself with the lore at the moment, if I'm saying that right. For me, if what we've learned from Arcs of Omen and that these huge space hulks full of Chaos Marines are being sent forward to do these secret missions surrounded by fleets of ships, it just kind of niggles me, like, how did the Sweeney get on board and how are they really going to make a difference compared to a bunch of Terminators? Or they seem kind of a bit more of a lightweight kind of role compared to Space Marines, if that makes sense.
I'm not sure, was it this morning? It's the end of Friday, so God knows when you actually messaged about it's my understanding, because I think there was like a designer chat episode at some point on YouTube where they basically kind of changed when the Enforcers were released for Necromunda. They kind of changed a role in the lore of what RBTs were, and they basically escalated them to kind of, they're basically like the almost like the inquisitorial police force now, rather than the basic ground level troop police force is the Enforcers, and one up from then is the Subjugators. And then I think now it's like a big deal if an RBT's like visits a planet, because it's like on quite high authority that they are there for. So I think like it kind of fits the new lore a bit more than being in it for that reason. Because yeah, before, like, the standard, it would be like having an Enforcer on there in the way that like you're thinking, because that would be weird.
Right, so they're perhaps more like SWAT, but I know they definitely carry more authority of the Imperium, and they're much less at a kind of administrative level for a planet.
Yeah,
they're above that, aren't they?
They're
bringing the word of the Magistrorum. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay, no, okay. Either way, I'll be really happy to have some. So
I was going to say either way. See, I don't think you're going to argue with new models, are you?
I think
you could do what you want. You could be whoever you want.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And just give me guys with riot shields.
And harking back to that point we made about the Astra Militarum Codex, like there's easily space for a little 25 power or 500 point Astra Militarum army that consists purely of the models like the Breachers, potentially Arbites as they come out, the Necromunda Enforcers, you know, just like, you know, obviously using the 40k rules, but just using the Necromunda or Kill Team models and just rolling with that. Like, that
yeah,
would be
I mean,
cool.
I would be completely fine if someone did like, you know, use Enforcers as your, you know, standard troopers, and then use the Subjugators as, like, is it Balgrins, the one with the big shields?
Yeah.
It's like I'd be like, yeah, that's cool. That fits. It's got a big shield. It's a big, bulky trooper. Like, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, or even if the enforcers became kind of a bit more like ship security, so they're not necessarily at a navy level. They're more of the, they're not the marines, which we got with the breaches. I mean, there's all sorts of wiggle room in that, isn't there? I mean, I think
the other, like the other thing to say with marines as well is, I think we kind of get disillusioned because we see so many of them. There's not actually that many. No. So that's why, like, the RBTs and the naval breaches are really important, because that's, like, they do a lot of the bulk work when Space Marines aren't about.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Yeah, we're definitely kind of seeing, like, the Hollywood version of 40K rather than, like, the actual, like, gritty kind of... Grimdark is thrown out a bit too much these days, but, like, the universe is quite, you know... quite low.
There's a great places. There's a great Iron Snakes story.
Oh, is
where,
this another,
like,
another short story, Gary?
It's a collection of short stories, actually. where, like, this Imperial planet, like, loads of people start going missing, and so they need support from off-world, and they the Iron Snakes basically heed their call, and they're expecting, like, this army of Space Marines to come, and it's just one Space Marine. It's like, nah, I'll handle it, don't worry. I just really love that, like, that actual representation of a Space Marine. It's like, nah, you only need one, it's okay.
Same for similar vibes, a short story in the original Angels of Death Codex from second edition. Again, part of my Blood Angel research, I've been kind of revisiting some older,
nice,
old books, and this, like, an assault squad rocks up. I don't know whether it's 5 or 10, but it's like a handful of dudes. And the assault squad sergeant goes to, like, a Mordian Iron Guard commander and says, like, right, where's the problem? There's a bunch of renegades in there. And they're like, okay, cool. And the Mordian Iron Guard's like, you might need to call reinforcements. And the Space Marine's just like, right, whatever. And just, like, jump packs over into the thing and just, like, and they just absolutely massacre all these renegades. And the Mordian's like, gotcha. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I don't. You had this. Yeah, that's really cool. I like that a lot. How good are short stories?
We can tell you're a fan, Gary. We can tell you're a fan. Talking of short stories,
it's almost like my attention span isn't big enough for a full novel.
Talking of short stories, I will make my kind of hopes and dreams for 2023 slightly
yes,
shorter,
Dan, because
we are running out of time. For me, I'm not going to pick a release or a model or a faction or something. I'm just really looking forward to kind of 2023 in general, without wanting to go too serious. 2022 and, like, the back end of 2021, for a number of different reasons, were pretty terrible for me, just in life, like mental health, like a collapse of a marriage, and all that jazz. Hobby has taken a huge back step on that. This podcast took a huge back step on that. You know, Steve and I stopped recording for a few months whilst I kind of sorted a few things out. So whether it's, like, building models, painting models, playing games, physically playing games. Noting, of course, that for the 2 years prior, we were all in lockdown and COVID and stuff, so we didn't play much anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, getting behind the mics and chatting to you guys about this hobby that we love. For me, I'm just really looking forward to having, like, a really healthy, positive 2023. And Warhammer has always been an amazing, like, you know, distraction from the stresses of life, but also, like, a really kind of mindful way for me to kind of switch off from a little bit from the outside world and just focus on trying to get, like, some line highlights on a Space Marine shoulder pad, things like that. So, yeah, I'm, you know, I could talk about, like, how excited I am for the theoretical 10th edition, which we hear might be coming this summer, or various different factions that don't exist or might need a refresh. But for me, it's just doing cool things with Warhammer, hanging out with good friends, rolling some dice, and kind of just having a positive hobby 2023. That's what I'm most looking forward to.
And that mine's still epic. No, sorry, that you're totally right. That's all sounds glorious. And it's it's really, I mean, it's the best escapism, isn't it? Like, it's so much fun. And we can talk to all our friends who, you know, it's kind of, you, I think you forget outside of the hobby when you talk to people that, like, not everyone is, like, that passionate about stuff in general. Yeah. So, like, then when you talk to friends, like, you know, just talking tonight, and it's, like, really exciting because you're and you're amped up because you're talking about something that you're also happy about. And also, it can take a back step because the most important thing is that friendship
that you make.
100%.
The real Warhammers are the friends you make along the way.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think for me, one of the things from lockdown was that, yeah, I got a bunch of models made and painted. But what I really realized that even though I'm probably 80-20 for making, painting versus playing, just putting them in a box once I've made them was like, no, I need to go and bring them to life and play games and share them with my mates.
You got one of those little cupboards as well that you can put stuff in and close it comes to life.
I just, for me, so yeah, absolutely. It is sharing this stuff is what, and you know, and it, by sharing it, people give you feedback and you can kind of go, yeah, okay. Or you can share with people, what do you think about this? You know, obviously I was sharing my sludge pool with these guys recently. And
yeah.
This, just for the record, this is a Warhammer thing Steve is talking about.
I've got some cream from the doctor. But yeah, no, so I think that's it. And then we all kind of grow in our gaming and our ideas and our skills. And yeah, no, Dan, 100% behind you, mate.
Yeah, totally. It's a very, very worthy thing.
So on that slightly serious note, we will end the podcast there. Hopefully
forever.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Leave on a high, right? We'll wrap up the episode there. Hopefully everyone's enjoyed our little run through of what we enjoyed the most about 2022 and what
I apologize for bringing the quality down.
And we look forward to having you back on future episodes, Gary, for more Kill Team 40K related content in the future. If you know, is there a specific thing you disagree with? You think there's no way Bayard's Revenge is that good? What you should have chosen as favorite model should have been this, whatever. Do let us know. Let us know what your favorite model of last year was, and let us know what you're looking forward to the most. You can get hold of us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, where we are at AOTI40K. And this episode will be one of the first few episodes that's going up on our new YouTube channel as well, where we are AOTI40K as well. So all that remains is to thank Gary and Steve for joining me today and wish you all a happy 23. Keep calm and crusade on.